Welcome to The Investment Conversation, Lord Abbott's ongoing podcast series.
This broadcast was originally recorded on September 4th, 2019. The recent inversion of the U.S. Treasury curve has sparked concern that the U.S. economy will slip into recession after a decade-long expansion. But it seems that the recipe for recession isn't as simple as a change in the relationship of short and long-term interest rates. There are a number of factors that can combine to tip an economy into negative growth. Some of them can be tracked over time, while others are far more difficult to predict. So, what does this all mean right now for the U.S. economy? We'll discuss that and more in this edition of The Investment Conversation. Hi, I'm Will Andrews, and joining me today is Lord Abbott's Director of Strategic Asset Allocation, Giulio Martini. Welcome, Giulio.
Thanks, Will. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So, Giulio, is an inverted yield curve necessarily a one-way ticket to recession?
Well, the brief answer is no, it isn't. But let's just back up a little bit and think about what the yield curve is. What the yield curve is a description or a chart of interest rates at different maturities. And when the yield curve is inverted, it means that longer-term interest rates are below shorter-term interest rates. Now, you can think of interest rates at different maturities as being related to each other. To a first approximation, a longer maturity instrument is just a series of rolls of a shorter maturity instrument. So if you take a three-year Treasury note, for instance, you can think of that as just 12 rolls of a three-month T-bill. So if the three-year rate is below the three-month rate, it means that investors are expecting short-term interest rates to fall and therefore long-term interest rates to be below the current short-term rate. Now, the reason why an inverted yield curve is taken as a negative indicator by investors is that the yield curve has in fact inverted before every U.S. recession in the post-World War II period. And that's a pretty regular pattern. So people start to get worried when they see long-term interest rates falling below short-term interest rates because of that relationship that has held historically.
Well, does an inverted yield curve always precede recession? Has it always been a reliable signal?
No, it hasn't been. The yield curve has inverted without a recession following, you know, in the next 1 to 2 years a number of times. It did so twice in the 1990s, once in 1995, and then again in 1998, and prior to that also in the late 1960s. But I think the key point is that there is nothing that relates the inversion of the yield curve causally to a downturn in the economy. In other words, it's not as if the expectation that interest rates will fall triggers delays in capital spending or delays in consumer auto purchases or delays in inventory financing that bring about the downturn because people are waiting for lower interest rates to spend. Instead, the fact that interest rates are expected to decline is related to the fact that the economy slows down before every recession. We never go from boom or above trend growth directly into a recession. The economy transitions through a slowdown before a recession follows. And it's during those slowdowns that investors start to expect short-term interest rates to fall. So the reason you see this relationship between the yield curve and recession isn't because the yield curve causes the recession. It's because the yield curve is responding to an economic slowdown, and the economy always slows before a recession takes place. Now, that's important right now because we just had a quarter where GDP growth was 2% in the second quarter of 2019. The current estimates are that in the third quarter, GDP growth is going to be about between 2 and 2.5%. And those are both growth rates that are above most estimates of potential output growth right now. So the economy is actually growing above trend. The slowdown that would lead to the recession has not even begun yet. And so this is, you know, a contender for another case where the yield curve inverts without a recession following, you know, in the next year or two.
Apart from the inverted curve, recession worriers point to the current U.S.-China trade conflict. Can you give us your view of the near-term impact and what could happen if it drags on? What are some of the dynamics here that we should be thinking about?
Well, there are a couple of things to unpack there. So first of all, let's just think about the direct impact of trade friction between the U.S. and China. That direct impact is actually likely to be pretty limited. The reason being that when you look at Chinese exports to the U.S., they're only 3.6% of GDP. So even if we had, you know, a 10% drop in Chinese exports to the United States, that would have a direct impact of 0.3 to 0.4%. It's not that large.
Sure.
And if you turn that around, U.S. exports to China are less than 1% of U.S. GDP. So even if U.S. exports to China were to go down by 10 or 20%, the effect on GDP would be kind of, you know, rounding error. So the direct impact isn't that large.
Mm-hmm.
The second layer, though, is that the trade conflict between the U.S. and China is generating lots of uncertainty. In other words, you know, it's possible that this trade conflict is just, you know, the first skirmish in what turns out to be a much broader strategic conflict. And if that's true, then, you know, the investments that U.S. companies and global multinationals have made in China are going to become much less valuable. And, you know, the investments that Chinese companies have made in the U.S. and around the world could also suffer. So it's generating a lot of uncertainty that it's not clear what the scope of this conflict really is and how it's going to affect the global economy and the location of global assets and global productive capacity. The other aspect to keep in mind is that we don't have a lot of historical examples of trade conflict to rely on in trying to understand how this may play out. The last really global trade conflict was in the 1930s, and it was one of the elements that led to, you know, the Great Depression and a very poor global economic performance during that period. But, you know, in the last 80 years, we don't have anything to fall back on to try and understand how this may unfold. And of course, investors and markets hate uncertainty. You know, risk is an everyday thing when you can look at probability distributions, but you need a lot of cases and a lot of examples to understand risk in that sense. When you have things that own nobody's interests to have a full-blown trade war, it's going to potentially damage President Trump's reelection chances if this intensifies and creates enough uncertainty to really have a very negative impact on the economy. And it's also going to do damage to Xi Jinping's power in China if the Chinese economy starts to really falter badly because of an inability to really negotiate an outcome that's more benign. So it's in the interest of both sides to resolve this, and we could have a very good outcome too, but, you know, we could also have something that's worse than what we've seen so far. And that's why markets are just undecided about which way to go with this.
As a reminder, visitors to our podcast page on lordabbott.com can view a terrific and timely display that Giulio put together on the U.S.-China trade dynamic. But let's shift gears a bit. You've told us that following World War II, U.S. recessions had some common ingredients, but that the recipe has changed in the past few decades. How so?
Well, you know, recessions used to be pretty simple affairs. From the end of World War II until the end of the 1970s, recessions were always following the same script. The economy would be in a period of economic growth. Eventually, economic growth would unfold for long enough to start to trigger inflation pressure. Inflation pressure would cause the Fed to start raising interest rates. Once interest rates went above regulated ceilings in the banking system, the banking system would disintermediate. The housing sector would be denied you know, funds absolutely, and very interest rate sensitive sectors of the economy would drop extremely sharply, and that would trigger the downturn. Since we had broad-based financial deregulation, the recessions that have followed have been much more complicated, and they've been the outcome of multiple causes. So that in the early 1990s, the recession that we had was caused by mild corporate deleveraging and an energy price shock that hurt consumer spending as a result of the U.S. invasion of Iraq in response to Iraq's invasion of Kuwait. At the end of the 2000s, we had another recession that was triggered by the bursting of the tech bubble in the stock market, tremendous negative wealth effects, and also an oil price shock. And then in 2008, 2009, we had a very serious recession that was created by, first really a very significant pullback in activity in the housing sector, a liquidity crisis that was created by the failure of Lehman Brothers, and an oil price shock again. So the modern recessions have really had multiple causes. It hasn't been just inflation gets too high, the Fed tightens, we have a recession to bring inflation back under control. It's really been multiple things converging to create the downturn. And as I said before, the road is always from strong growth to weak growth. And during that period of weak growth, you get a shock that leads to a recession. And every one of our recessions has had an oil price shock as part of the story. And that's an element that could be very different this time around.
Well, that's interesting because we've recently seen the U.S. expansion set a record for longevity. Can you give us your assessment of where things stand now and the likelihood that the expansion will continue? It almost seems hard to believe that the economy is still in a position to continue growing after 10 plus years.
Yeah, it's 122 months and counting. We're in month number 123 right now. And, it doesn't look like there's going to be a recession, certainly in 2019. And I don't think we're going to have one in 2020. So this is going to, continue adding to that record. And the reason I feel, fairly confident about economic growth in the future is that, inflation remains very, very low in the U.S. economy. And so I think the Fed will be able to continue to execute a pretty accommodative monetary policy, which will support economic growth. And I also, don't see some of the triggers which could really lead to a downturn as really being in a position where that could happen in the short run. So, housing activity is not elevated or exaggerated right now. In fact, it's spending on residential construction in the U.S. economy is closer to what it has been at past troughs or bottoms in economic activity than it is at prior peaks. Capital spending has become much less cyclical because so much more of what U.S. corporations spend on is intellectual property, software, copyright, all those kinds of things, rather than the kind of highly cyclical equipment and construction spending which dominated in the past. The same thing for autos, right? That's autos and consumer durables are another highly cyclical item. But what we see is, households that are in great shape right now. We have almost record high household real net worth, a savings rate that's just under 8%, which is very high for the U.S. economy. And also we have falling energy prices. So, you've got consumer spending that's not only been very strong, in the second quarter of this year and into the third quarter, but the underlying fundamentals to sustain it going forward remain quite strong. So you just don't have in place any of the triggers which have led to downturns in the past. Instead, what you see policymakers and investors worrying about is this idea that you know, the trade conflict and unpredictable policy making is going to cause a loss of confidence that's so large that we're going to kind of talk ourselves into a downturn, you know, rather than have some objective, you know, loss of spending trigger a downturn. That has never happened before, that, you know, the world has sort of talked itself into a downturn by inducing paralysis through some loss of confidence. And honestly, you know, the data just don't support that interpretation right now. You know, and I just can't buy that kind of story about weakness, you know, developing to such an extent that GDP actually falls in the United States and goes way below trend in the world as a whole. That story, you know, does not resonate for me.
But Giulio, an extended U.S.-China trade war that sours the mood of the U.S. consumer could call all those assumptions into question.
Yeah, so I could see all those factors leading up to a slowdown in GDP, where growth goes from above trend to below trend. And a slowdown in GDP is the precursor to a possible recession. But a slowdown in and of itself doesn't lead to recession. You need some kind of shock to take a slowdown and turn it into a downturn. And that's a shock that, you know, historically, as I mentioned, the last six recessions have had spike in oil prices implicated as part of the shock that took a weak situation and turned it into consecutive quarters of negative growth, the classic definition of recession. And so I think you are in a situation where, you know, concerns about global trade conflict, uncertainty about broader economic and strategic issues, you know, lead to some loss of confidence, which causes hesitation that's significant enough to take GDP growth down to low enough rates that the economy is vulnerable to recession. But then you need something else that's going to produce that downturn. And instead, what we're seeing is at the first sign of potential weakness, policymakers are rushing to put measures into effect that are going to sustain growth by cutting interest rates, foregoing planned interest rate increases. In Germany, talking about fiscal stimulus, which is a, you know, a big thing. And, you know, also in the United States, some rumblings about support on the fiscal side if growth really looks like it's going to weaken. So, you know, that's the opposite of what's happened in the past when a vulnerable economy has met policy that continues to tighten and we eventually get a downturn. When you have weak growth, but the response to weak growth is to stimulate demand, we've never had a recession after that. We've always had, you know, ultimately a recovery.
Can we zero in on what this all means for investors? What should they be thinking about in the current environment? Would you say it's a risk on or a risk off situation?
You know, in the very recent past, you know, we had, you know, global stock prices really peak early in 2018 and not do much since then. And in the U.S., we also had a peak in early 2018, another one in September 2018, slightly higher peak just late this past July, right? But stocks haven't done a lot in the past few years. But bonds have done very well, right? We're pretty close to the lows for this cycle in the 10-year bond yield. And so I think we've probably got a situation where investors, you know, given this kind of uncertainty, have more or less been happy to, you know, ride the falling bond yields, you know, and just really enjoy the benefits in terms of rising bond prices. And I suspect that investors are probably a little bit overweight bonds relative to stocks, you know, compared to what their long-term allocation is, whether that's 60-40, 70-30, 50-50, whatever it is. And so I think this is a great opportunity to rebalance portfolios and get back to those long-term allocations. I wouldn't make a case for either of the extremes. In other words, I don't think we have to go to risk off where, you know, you really want to reduce your exposures to stocks, to credit, to other assets which benefit from, you know, a good environment. And I also don't think that valuations are such that you really want to take a strong risk-on stance. If you look at stocks globally, they're valued at about the long-term median of the past 25, 30 years right now compared to current earnings expectations. You know, you look at spreads in corporate credit or in high yield, and, you know, they're pretty close to long-term averages. So they're not saying, you know, this is a great time to jump in. So I think what you want to do is take this opportunity to really look at your asset allocation, remember why your asset allocation is what it is, see where your current portfolio is compared to that, and rebalance. And I suspect what that means in many cases is, you know, reducing your bond exposure to get back up to target in your stock exposure. And I think that's would be a healthy thing to do right now after a really good run in the bond market.
Well, Giulio, this has been a terrific discussion. Thanks, as always, for your insights, and thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure to have been here, Will, and I look forward to doing this again sometime in the future.
Well, to sum things up, while the markets and financial media focus on an inverted U.S. yield curve as a harbinger of recession, in reality, there are a number of other conditions necessary to bring on a downturn. In the absence of a major shock, such as a severe spike in oil prices, the evidence still suggests that the U.S. expansion will remain on track. With that in mind, and in the context of recent equity and fixed income valuations, we think investors should avoid making drastic and sudden changes to their current allocations. Instead, we believe they should make sure that their current exposures remain in line with their long-term investment goals.
That's it for this edition of The Investment Conversation. Please drop us a line on social media or visit our website at lordabbott.com. Our audio podcasts are available on iTunes, Spotify, TuneIn, and other major streaming media services. Thanks for listening. The business cycle refers to the increase and decrease in the production of goods and services in an economy. Fed refers to the U.S. Federal Reserve. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. The value of investments in fixed income securities will change as interest rates fluctuate and in response to market movements. Generally, when interest rates rise, the prices of debt securities fall, and when interest rates fall, prices generally rise. The municipal market can be affected by adverse tax, legislative, or political changes, and by the financial condition of the issuers of municipal securities. Investments in foreign or emerging market securities may be adversely affected by economic, political, or regulatory factors and subject to currency volatility and greater liquidity risk. The value of investments in equity securities will fluctuate in response to general economic conditions and to changes in the prospects of particular companies and/or sectors in the economy. No investing strategy can overcome all market volatility or guarantee future results. Market forecasts and projections are based on current market conditions and are subject to change without notice. Projections should not be considered a guarantee. The views and opinions expressed by the Lord Abbott speaker are those of the speaker as of the date of the broadcast and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm as a whole. Any such views are subject to change at any time based upon market or other conditions, and Lord Abbott disclaims any responsibility to update such views. This material is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice. It is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or to adopt any investment strategy. Neither Lord Abbott nor the Lord Abbott speaker can be responsible for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information offered. The information provided is not directed at any investor or category of investors and is provided solely as general information about Lord Abbott's products and services and to otherwise provide general investment education. None of the information provided should be regarded as a suggestion to engage in or refrain from any investment-related course of action, as neither Lord Abbott nor its affiliates are undertaking to provide impartial investment advice, act as an impartial advisor, or give advice in a fiduciary capacity. If you are an individual retirement investor, contact your financial advisor or other fiduciary about whether any given investment idea, strategy, product, or service may be appropriate for your circumstances. This broadcast is the copyright 2019 of Lord Abbott and Company, LLC. All rights reserved. This recording may not be reproduced in whole or in part or any form without the permission of Lord Abbott.